hearing is number 013506, the United States against Bill S. Kahn, Sr. Mr. Henn.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
May it please the Court, my name is David Henn. I represent the appellant Bill Kahn on his appeal from his conviction for dealing firearms without a license from the Southern District of Indiana. Mr. Kahn is accused of selling firearms to undercover agents on six separate transactions. From these six transactions, the government charged Mr. Kahn with six separate counts, each count corresponding with a different or a separate sale to the undercover officers. To prove Mr. Kahn was dealing firearms without a license, the government was required to prove a repetitive purchase and resale of firearms without a license. The jury acquitted Mr. Kahn of five of the six counts. Mr. Kahn attacks his conviction on count six, which was the final transaction, on two broad theories. One, that there is insufficient evidence to support his conviction, and the second is the testimony provided by ATF agent McCart on whether his collection of guns were in fact a personal collection as defined by the statute. The question that is central to Mr. Kahn's appeal today is, what do those acquittals on the first five counts mean? It is Mr. Kahn's position that the government was required to prove this repetitive series of purchases and resales, and that its theory before the trial court and argued to the jury was that these six counts should be all collectively considered as that succession of repetitive purchases and resales. By acquitting Mr. Kahn,
they should have all been charged in one count?
Yes, Your Honor.
They should have all been lumped into one as a series that would get this repetitive issue?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Was there anything in the instructions or whatever that would have allowed the jury to, we'll say, accumulate the past history and funnel them all into that six count?
No, Your Honor. The instructions track the language of the statute itself, which instructed the jury to determine whether there was a repetitive purchase and resale of firearms.
But what, you know, the jury might have acquitted Mr. Kahn on counts 1 to 5 for any, you know, number of reasons. What precludes the jury from looking at the sales underlying those counts as proof that he was engaged in a course of dealing for purposes of count six? I mean, notwithstanding the jury's decision to acquit him, you know, on the other five counts. Sometimes we see 200 counts, you know, on him.
Your Honor, the statute itself requires this repetitive conduct of purchase and resale. This is not like a drug sale where the act in and of itself, one incident, is a crime. The government had to prove this series of transactions, and its theory before the jury was that 1 through 6 was a repetitive transaction. Now, essentially, the government attempted to stretch one criminal episode into six different crimes. And in doing so, it opened the door for the jury to wipe out the exact series of repetitive transactions it was using to support the its request for convictions on all six counts.
Do the first five of each involve only one weapon?
Your Honor, I believe some of them involved two weapons. On different incidents, the agent came to his property in pairs.
What if the evidence is enough to have convicted, to support the conviction on count six?
Well, Your Honor, even if this argument prevails and you agree with me that, yes, the acquittals wipe out 1 through 5, we still have a sale to Alberta Mueller. We also have a supposed sale that Rodney Pollard witnessed, and then we have the sale on count six. This is a fine line between reweighing evidence and drawing a line in the sand. What makes somebody a gun dealer? What the evidence shows is Mr. Kahn was 60 years old. He started buying guns 40 years ago. He had a collection of over 300 guns in his house, and the government proves that during an 18-month period after collecting guns for 40 years, there's three transactions assuming that I'm correct on the counts 1 through 5. There's 3 transactions. One, with Alberto Mueller, he buys the guns back, and in fact, they're seized from his house the day that he's arrested. The one that Rodney Pollard thinks he witnessed, there was no gun ever transacted. He saw some kids show up and give money to Mr. Kahn, and he presumed it was for a gun. And then we have the clear and obvious sale to the undercover agents. What makes a person a gun collector versus a gun dealer? If we look at prior decisions by this court, we look at number of guns and proximity of time. 3 guns within a short period of time of a few weeks, this court has held, yes, that is a gun dealer. 9 guns over a greater period of time does as well. I would submit that this court should look at this in the totality of the circumstances and say we have some speculated evidence here. We have a man who's collected guns for 40 years, and over 18 months, he may have done 3 transactions. That doesn't make somebody a gun dealer. The second prong of Mr. Kahn's attack on his appeal is actually arises under his primary defense, as Mr. Kahn didn't contest that he sold these weapons 1 through 6 to the undercover agent. His primary defense was that this was from his personal collection, which is permitted under the statute. To attack that defense, the government offered ATF agent McCart's opinion testimony that Mr. Kahn's guns did not constitute a collection as defined by that statute. There is a difference of opinion between my opposing counsel and I as to whether Mr. Agent McCart's testimony was offered as expert or lay witness testimony. What I would just point to the court that Judge Barker, in overruling an objection, specifically found that Mr. or Agent McCart's testimony was offered within the scope of his experience and expertise. She called him an expert in the presence of the jury. That could be found on the record at page 419. If this is expert testimony, and clearly by Judge Barker's remarks, it was expert testimony, then there was required a foundation and an examination of that of his qualifications and the source of his testimony. Agent McCart testified he received the basic training from ATF on nature and value of rare weapons. He testified he was not a gun collector or did not participate in monitoring gun collection, to gun shows, etc. He offered his personal opinion that only a few of Mr. Kahn's guns held value and that he did not consider the 300 or so guns sitting before him in the courtroom to be a gun collection. He did not offer anything to explain how he valued the guns or how he used any materials or knowledge or experience to derive his opinion.
Was he subject to cross-examination on any
issues? He was,
Your
Honor.
He was.
He was subject to cross-examination on these issues.
And after that cross-examination, did counsel renew his objection to on the ground of lack of foundation?
Your Honor, he was examined on voir dire while the government was attempting to lay his foundation for qualifications as an expert.
I see.
And at the end of that voir dire, the objection was renewed and overruled. I'm into my rebuttal time, and I would like to reserve that, please.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We'll hear now from Mr. Warren.
May it please the Court, good morning. My name is James Warden. I represent the government here today, as I did before the district court in the trial of this matter. I think Judge Romner's questions really focus on what is before us now, and that really is sufficiency of the evidence. The focus really is whether or not there is sufficient evidence to support the verdict in count 6. And as the Supreme Court said in the Powell decision, which I know this Court's familiar with and which I cited, the fact that there may be acquittals that seem inconsistent really is not material. They may not be inconsistent, but even if they are, what this Court should do is look at this count of conviction and analyze whether it's supported in the evidence. And of course, that's a sufficiency standard, which then must be evaluated in the light most favorable to the government.
What do you have to prove to convict on count 6?
Well, count 6, Your Honor, dealt with the transaction on April 24th of 2000 there were dealing in two different firearms on that day. There was an ATF agent and a state police officer who were there. The focus that I hear in the argument is that this was the result of repetitive sales, and it was done for a business. And certainly the...
What was that last... This was the result of repetitive sales?
That it has to be part of repetitive sales to violate the statute.
No, that's not your position, or is it?
Well, let me try to explain my answer, Your Honor. There's no question about the law in this respect. An isolated sale by someone without a license does not violate the statute. And the judge properly instructed, with the assent of the defendant, the law in this regard, and I've got that instruction here if the court wants me to reference that. In order to be dealing, it has to be something where there were repetitive sales. And there was very substantial evidence of that in the record. First of all, contrary to the way this was characterized by the counsel this morning, there were several transactions with Alberta Moeller prior to the undercover operation being undertaken.
So those weren't charged?
Those were not charged, Your Honor. There was, what initiated the undercover was the observation by the civilian, Mr. Pollard, when he went to deal with Mr. Kahn and observed Mr. Kahn dealing firearms with minors. And there was an unsuccessful dealing with Mr. Pollard himself. So the government established the background. But more importantly, the jury certainly could consider the five transactions in the first five counts of the indictment that did not result in conviction to show that Mr. Kahn was in the business of dealing in firearms. Every occasion which an undercover officer approached him, he made a deal. He never said, I don't want to deal with you.
Well, how did they consider that if the jury, in effect, said it didn't happen, or at least not beyond a reasonable doubt?
Well, I think, Your Honor, again, I would be speculating as to why the jury did this. As Judge Roedner pointed out, you know, this could be a matter of lenity. How do we ever know why a jury did this? I will make this supposition to answer your question. By the last transaction, the count of conviction is the last transaction, and I think there's that greater certainty that by that time he must be a dealer, because every time the police approached him, he was willing to undertake a deal. He tried to buy, he tried to sell every time. Also importantly, probably the strongest evidence beyond the actual conduct of the defendant were his own statements. And of course this was presented to the jury because all the conversations with the police officers were recorded and then played for the jury. And in these conversations, and some are quoted in my brief, he talked about he's got 300 long guns for sale, he has 150 handguns for sale, he gets guns in every day. Everything I have is for sale. He is telling the officers and then ultimately the jury that he's a gun dealer. It's nonsense for him to portray this as a collection in the sense that the statute means, which is someone who's acquiring guns for a collection and then at some point in his life or her life decides to get rid of that collection. He is buying.
There's a lot of evidence in the record, testimony, etc., beyond the first five charges, in addition to count six, about transactions, dealing, being in the business and all
that. Well, specifically, Your Honor, there is two witnesses that testified specifically about transactions that they observed, Ms. Moeller and Mr. Pollard, and then the defendant's son testified on the defendant's behalf, but his testimony was that his father trades in firearms all the time. And his wife admitted, because she was present during some of the undercover transactions, she acknowledged that dealing. In cross-examination from me, the defendant admitted that he did this to make money. He admitted that he tried to buy firearms every time the police officers offered him firearms if he could get the firearms for the right price, which never happened. We did not ever intend to sell him firearms. That was the decision the government made. But in every single instance in which he was approached, he sold firearms. Now, with respect to this testimony of the ATF agent, I think this is being blown way out of proportion in terms of its significance in this case. First of all, it wasn't offered, and it's being mischaracterized as being offered as expert testimony.
It was offered under 701?
Yes, Your Honor, very clearly. And I don't contest that Judge Barker said the word expertise at the end, but there was never any effort, because this was not scientific, this is not technical, this is this witness's experience.
The rule also says, or other specialized knowledge. And the 2000 amendments to this rule make it very clear that when a law enforcement officer talks about things that he knows because of his work as a police officer, that's 702 evidence. In fact, the gap report of the rules was amended to make that point specifically.
Yes, Your Honor. I endeavor to cite the case, and I understand the court's point, that show, however, that when these observations are based, when the testimony is based on your observations, your near experience, which other people could have, understanding that he's a law enforcement officer, but other non-law enforcement people could have, in their experience, dealt with firearms.
Are those cases after the 2000 amendment?
I think they're before, Your Honor, and I appreciate the court's point.
I mean, that seemed to be what the court was, that's what the Congress was aiming at when it
I understand.
Went through this ruling.
However, Your Honor, I don't believe that Judge Barker, let me say it this way, the government did not offer this as expert testimony, and I don't think the court found that. Perhaps most importantly is, even if this was erroneous to admit this, and Your Honor made the point that this was subject to cross-examination and ultimately it goes to the weight, which, from my opinion, having tried the case, it really wasn't very significant.
What did the jury hear, though? They didn't hear the cross-exam. That was involved.
No, that's not true, Your Honor. They heard the cross-exam. There was an objection,
okay.
And then, as defense counsel called it, the voir dire, but this was done in front of the jury.
Yeah.
So they heard all of this.
So the jury did hear this?
Yes, Your Honor. And trial defense counsel had the opportunity and did cross-examine the witness about these firearms. Of course, he had the opportunity, no obligation, to bring in other evidence to show these art collector's items, which he chose not to do, probably because they're not.
Tell me what did the officer say about his background?
He'd been an ATF agent, I believe, for about 10 years, that in his experience, he's dealt with firearms, that he has, from that training experience, some understanding of what firearms have particular value as collector's items, and that these firearms that were in evidence, those that were seized in the search warrant on the same day as the last transaction, were not of value in the sense that they'd be held by collectors. But more importantly, Your Honor, I believe is, and I mentioned this, of course, in the brief, if this is erroneous, it's so harmless here because the evidence is so overwhelming that this is not a sale from a collection. He bought and sold firearms all the time by his own admissions and by the conduct that was presented to the jury. And when you buy and sell all the time, that is not the exception created by the collector provision of the statute. I see that my time is up unless the court has any questions. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Warden. Mr. Henn, you have a minute and a half.
Thank you, Your Honor. The question of whether Mr. Khan's guns were a collection was not an insignificant part of the trial. It was his primary and virtually only defense. The transactions were all on tape. He did not deny having sold the guns to the ATF agents or other undercover officers. In response to Agent McCart's testimony, Mr. Khan took the stand and said, "That's my collection of guns. It's a poor man's collection, but I've been collecting for 40 years. This is a central issue. This was his primary and only defense. And it was greatly damaging to his defense to have the court recognize an expert without having examined the qualifications of that agent's testimony.
What would a collection consist of that would be different than whatever the agent testified to?
Well, Your Honor, the statute doesn't define what a personal collection is, so we have to operate from the plain and ordinary meaning of those terms. A collection could be virtually anything, I suppose. Somebody may collect guns for value, which is the standard Agent McCart used. Somebody could collect guns for a certain make or model, could collect guns of historical significance.
Does one who collects theoretically keep, as opposed to trading and upgrading and doing other things?
No, I don't believe so, because the statute specifically allows for a collector to add to or detract from his collection. Specifically exempts those transactions from the licensing requirements. And with that, my time has expired. Now, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hinn. Indeed, our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.